Now the price of an Uber or Lyft ride is about 40% higher than it was a year ago. Having food delivered, staying in an Airbnb, renting a scooter to get across town, expect to pay more for these app-based services than you did in the past. A lot of these apps, it turns out, offered low rates, bankrolled by Silicon Valley investors. Our guest is here to explain the economic method behind those discounts and tell us why the era of cheap rides may be coming to a close. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use any of these app services, the Ubers or Lyfts or Airbnbs or DoorDash? Have you noticed price changes? Have you taken advantage of deals? Do you work for one of these services? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kevin Roos is a technology columnist for the New York Times. His recent piece is titled Farewell, Millennial Lifestyle Subsidy. Kevin, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Kevin, let's talk about the business strategy of a lot of these companies initially. The big plan was, if I'm reading you right, lose money, lose lots of it to attract customers. How did that work?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, but not much. This strategy is called blitzscaling in tech lingo. And what it basically means is if you are a company that's trying to disrupt an existing market like taxis or hotels or meal delivery, something like that, what you want to do is you want to raise millions of dollars in venture capital from investors. You want to get big as fast as possible in a couple markets, maybe San Francisco or New York or Los Angeles. And the way that you want to get big is by making your products and services artificially cheap. So if you are running Uber and you want a lot of people to take Uber instead of a taxi, you just make the Ubers cheaper than a taxi, even if it means losing money on every ride. You do the same thing in meal delivery or hotels, and you grow your business that way. And then once you've sort of elbowed out all the competitors and become a dominant market player, then you can start raising prices again. And this has worked for a number of companies like Uber and Airbnb, but for a lot of companies, they never are able to actually flip that switch. They just keep losing money and eventually they go out of business. And this is what we saw happen to MoviePass last year. And I think this is, one aspect of this is that for a number of years, millennials, people like me in these big urban markets, could take advantage of these really luxury services at a non-luxury price, at a pretty reasonable price. And it kind of allowed us to live beyond our means in a way.
Yeah, the headline is, like I said, Farewell, Millennial Lifestyle Subsidy. And that's sort of a joking, not joking description of how these things function for millennials. Could you talk about that lifestyle subsidy a little?
Yeah, well, this is a little tongue-in-cheek. And to be clear, I don't blame millennials, myself included, for taking advantage of these deals. But I do think it points to just how odd this past decade in the economy has been. I did some math on one of these scooter startups, that they put these rental scooters all over the country in the last couple of years. And there was one company, Bird, that was losing $9.66 for every $10 it made. So that's in addition to the $10 that it's not making, it's also losing an additional $9.66 on every transaction of $10. So that is the kind of subsidy we're talking about, where it's literally the consumer is paying half the price that it costs to provide the service. And so for obvious reasons, a lot of those companies have had to transition. They've had to start jacking up their prices. They've gone out of business because they just can't keep losing money like that forever.
Now, Kevin, this may shock you, but I am not a big money Silicon Valley investor. But if I was, would I really have the patience to watch a business earn or lose more than it's earning at that kind of rate? Are investors saying, yeah, this is a good long-term gamble?
Some of them are. Yeah, there's been a little bit of a turnaround in that. But I think it's important to remember that this is all part of the investor's plan. They want these companies to lose a lot of money very quickly and establish themselves as dominant market forces. And that has worked really, really well. The investors, early investors in Uber, have made a lot of money on those investments because the valuation of the company kept going up, even as it was losing more and more money. So the problem is that once you take these companies public, once they're being traded on the stock market, public investors don't have the same risk appetite as venture capitalists. They don't they aren't okay subsidizing billions of dollars in free, you know, or very cheap Uber rides for people. And so these companies, once they turn public, have had to show more profits, which has resulted in these subsidies shrinking.
Talking to Kevin Roos, technology columnist for the New York Times, looking at a lot of these app-based service providers, Uber and Lyft and Airbnb and the scooters and the meal delivery services. Prices going up as they try to turn the corner and make money. Do you rely on these apps, any of these services we've mentioned or others? Have you seen prices going up over the last year? Do you work at one of these? What's it like for you? Do you feel like you're getting fair return on your work? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Kevin, let's take this now to the consumers. What kind of price changes are they seeing here? Is it sticker shock, or is it more subtle than that?
Well, sometimes it's sticker shock. I think, you know, as you mentioned, the price of an Uber and a Lyft ride has gone up about 40% in the past year. And that's in part because of these subsidies going away, and in part just because there's a real driver shortage. Airbnb prices have also increased about 35% in the first quarter of this year compared with the year before. So There are some instances of sticker shock. There are also some instances where these companies have just ceased to exist. They went out of business. For example, there were a number of companies several years ago that were doing laundry delivery in big cities. You could use an app and they would come pick up your laundry and do it for you and then bring it back. And it was very, very cheap, sometimes cheaper than actually going to a laundromat yourself. And they burned through millions of dollars and eventually they all went out of business. So that's also sometimes the way that this ends.
As these prices go up now, are people going to be looking at, oh, those taxi companies, that's still there. Oh, and that hotel, that's still there. And all of a sudden, maybe it looks like a good deal compared to these price increases. How much concern is there about that from these app companies as their prices go up?
Yeah, well, I think they're at a big risk of that. I mean, I quoted one person in my story who was talking about, you know, Who's going to continue to pay $500 to stay in an Airbnb for 2 days when you can pay $300 to stay in a hotel that has a pool and room service and cleans your room every day? So I do think that's a risk. I think for Uber and Lyft, it's less of a risk because, frankly, there aren't that many cabs left. A lot of them have, you know, turned into Ubers and Lyfts. So I don't think there's too much danger of people going back to yellow cabs.
Yeah, and how much of it is, okay, if the person's gone to the trouble of putting, say, the Uber or Lyft app on their phone or enrolling in Airbnb and having that app, that force of habit now is going to keep them coming back, maybe more than brand loyalty even.
Absolutely. We've all become habituated to these on-demand services because, in part, they were artificially cheap. And so we built our sort of lifestyles around them. And not everyone did, obviously, but I'm speaking, you know, as a person who also did this. I took advantage of a lot of these deals. And it's hard to quit once you've gotten in the habit of getting your, you know, your dinner delivered for, you know, a nominal fee. When that fee suddenly goes up to $10 or $12 or $15, all of a sudden it's like, maybe I should cook for myself.
Talking to Kevin Roos, technology columnist at the New York Times. He's telling us why prices for a lot of app services like Uber, Airbnb, and Grubhub are on the rise. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you work in the so-called gig economy or sharing economy as a driver delivery person, say? Do you rent out Airbnb? Are you seeing things change from your perspective? Flip it around. If you're a customer of these things, are you in the habit of using them? You're going to stick with it, even if the price is going up, which it is lately. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Farad. Right now, we're picking up our talk with New York Times technology columnist Kevin Roos. The price of a rideshare, a meal delivery, or vacation rental may be on the rise, has been on the rise in many cases, as Silicon Valley hopes to start turning a profit on these app services. They spent years basically doing loss leaders to get people signed up to download the app. Now they want to do something like make money you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use any of these services around your hometown or when you travel with Uber, say, or Airbnb? Do you work for one of these? What are you seeing when it comes to the prices? Will you stick with it even if the price goes up? Or are you looking to go back to taxis or hotels when you need those kind of services? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear your experiences. Now, Kevin, we're not hearing people's experiences right now. And I wonder, how big a difference is there in, like, the big cities? You mentioned the San Franciscos and New Yorks of the world versus maybe not as much penetration into the Midwest without your huge cities.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the points I make in the article, is that these services, these prices, these strategies of blitzscaling, they were very concentrated among sort of a young, affluent consumer base in cities like New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles. Those were sort of the markets that these companies tested in before they rolled their services out to the rest of the country. So if you can remember, maybe, you know, in its early first couple of years, Uber was only available in San Francisco and a few other cities, and it then expanded all over the country. So the strategy often is lose a bunch of money in the big cities, test your service, see if people actually want it, and then if it turns out that there's appetite for it, then, you know, spend a bunch more money to expand all over the rest of the country and maybe internationally too.
And Kevin, I dimly remember that there was a good long stretch of time where Amazon was getting bigger and bigger, but not actually turning profits. And it seems like they're doing okay. Is that the blueprint for a lot of this kind of strategy?
Well, sort of. I mean, Amazon famously did not make a profit for the first many years of its existence until just a couple of years ago. It had never made a quarterly profit. And so that's the playbook that a lot of these companies are saying, is we'll just get as big as Amazon by losing money and then we'll turn a profit all of a sudden. But Amazon, it's important to remember, didn't lose money because it was selling, you know, $4 worth of toilet paper for $2.50. It was not losing money on individual transactions that made it unprofitable. It was that they were taking the profits from their business and reinvesting it into their business. I think the difference with a lot of these sort of startups that are sort of the Ubers for different industries is that they're actually losing money every time someone uses their service.
I wanted to ask about the employees and just, we've got to, actually speaking of users, let's go to Scott now in Duluth. Scott, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Scott?
Oh, in reference to the Airbnb prices, I'm a travel nurse. And so for the last 3 years, I've been doing Airbnb. It's been the cost-effective way for me to do my job. And I've noticed in this last year, the prices have gone up so much that I, first of all, what is offered out there is limited. There's not nearly as much as a few years ago. And what is out there, the prices have gone up so much that I converted a van into a mobile little home, and my most recent job here in Duluth, I'm staying in different spots and sleeping in a van, and still actively looking for places, Craigslist, Airbnb, but, you know, have resorted to staying in hotels and in my van. So that's my story.
Interesting, Scott. Thank you so much for sharing that. So Kevin, high prices driving people into hotels, or in this case, a van.
Absolutely. And you know, it's important to remember, it's not just that these subsidies are going away, right? We also have, for Airbnb, I mean, maybe fewer people are listing their houses on the platform because, you know, they're not excited about, during a pandemic, having people in their spare rooms who they don't know. There are other reasons that prices are rising for various things. But in the past, these companies and their billions of dollars in venture capital would have sort of made that shock less. They would have eased that burden on consumers by sort of giving more sort of discounts and things like that to sort of coax people onto the platform. But the problem a lot of these platforms have now is very different. They have too many customers. They have too many people who want to book Airbnbs and Ubers, and so they're having to kind of work on generating more supply.
Scott, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. And Kevin, let's talk about the labor side of things. You mentioned not enough Uber drivers in a lot of communities. We hear talk about maybe wages going up in general in the economy, some places having trouble hiring people. How much is that affecting the apps that we're talking about here?
Yeah, I think the worker shortage that's being felt in lots of sectors is also affecting the gig economy. Uber, for example, has started a driver stimulus program. So instead of subsidizing customers, they're now giving additional money to drivers to try to lure people back onto the platform. And, you know, there are reasons that people might not want to drive an Uber when there's a pandemic going around, and the idea of having strangers, you know, getting into your car all day may not be the most appealing thing. But I think that, you know, the labor shortage is real, and it's something that I think a lot of these companies are feeling.
We're talking to Kevin Roos, technology columnist for the New York Times, looking at what might be the end of an era, the era of cheap app-based services, prices on things like Uber and Lyft and Airbnb, DoorDash going up in many places around the country. And you could join in if you have an experience to share at 800-642-1234. Kevin, in your piece on this, you look at the scooter company you mentioned earlier, a Bird. They used to be losing lots of money on each rental. What has changed now in those communities that have these scooters?
Well, the first thing is they've jacked up the prices. The price of a scooter used to be something like 15 cents a mile or a minute. I'm sorry, 15 cents a minute. And now it's something more like 40 cents a minute in some markets. So they've more than doubled the price of a scooter rental. But they've also made certain improvements in, you know, getting more durable scooters that don't have to be replaced as often and sort of making other parts of their business more efficient. But the main one is just that they've jacked up prices. And so they're making a profit on every ride instead of losing, you know, $9.66 on every $10 ride. So that makes a big difference.
Now, we're mostly talking here, Kevin, about companies that have been around for some years. Now they're household names in a lot of places or close to. Do you see new companies emerging with this strategy, the blitz scaling strategy, or is this you know, kind of old hat now? I don't know.
Well, this has become a big part of the tech playbook. I mean, most Silicon Valley venture-funded startups use some version of this playbook. They want to get big first and then worry about making money later. And so you see this all over the place. I think the most interesting one right now is there are a bunch of these sort of 10-minute delivery apps that, you know, will deliver you a soda in 10 minutes or less from a local convenience store. And that just seems totally unsustainable to me unless you're charging, you know, $25 for the soda or something.
Huh. Now, you in the piece and on the air, you've mentioned, Kevin, you are a big user of these discounted service. Does, for you personally, does the convenience of the app and the service continue to justify using them even with the price? Or are you yourself starting to look at alternatives to some of the things you used to use?
Oh, absolutely. I've been forced to seek out alternatives to a lot of the stuff I used to do. But a lot of it is just, you know, behavioral change. So, you know, I used to get more meals delivered, and then when the price is raised, now I cook more meals for myself. Or I used to, you know, use an app to you know, book rides, and now I'll drive myself, or I'll bike, or I'll walk for short trips. So I think a lot of that is sort of just unlearning the automatic behaviors that we learned over the past decade or so. And you know, to a certain extent, maybe that's healthy. Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe it should be a rare luxury to have, you know, a private driver or to get your meal delivered. Maybe that shouldn't be as cheap as it has been.
As we look ahead for these big name companies that are on a lot of people's phones now, how long is it going to take us, do you think, to know if these price increases are going to hurt their business, if they're going to live through all of this?
Well, I think, you know, price increases in these apps, you know, maybe getting better as sort of the economy recovers from the pandemic and people start opening back up their spare rooms and, you know, get more comfortable driving people around, we might see some of the prices fall a little bit. But I think we're all just going to have to do a little bit of reassessing of sort of what our habits are. And I think especially those of us in big cities where these services were a dime a dozen, we just have to recalibrate our budgets and our expectations of what we can and can't afford.
Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kevin Roos is a technology columnist for The New York Times. We talked to him about his recent piece on Uber and Airbnb and a lot of these other app-based services that people in some communities have come to count on. Prices are going up now as they try to turn from a large-scale business, even if they lose money, to, you know, actually making money. Still time to hear from you. You could tweet us at Central Time WPR or email ideas at WPR.org. Are you seeing these price changes? If you're somebody who is planning to travel and maybe use the Airbnb, or if you use Uber in your town or when you go on the road somewhere, are you seeing these prices go up? And if you work at one of these companies, how's this affecting you? Tweet us at Central Time WPR.